Welcome, members and guests, to the January 17th program of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our TV audiences on community television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Mary Layton, past president and organizer of today's programs. Today's sponsors are Evans, Elder & Brown, Helios Resource Network, PAC Info Internet Solutions. A special thank you to KLCC for airing the programs on Monday night, and KPFF Consulting Engineers for office space. Welcome to new members, Linda Jensen and Jody Summers of Essex General Construction, and to our new sponsor, Driving Solutions Oregon, owned by Laura Fishrup. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, yet there are costs involved in presenting them. Your contribution is completely tax deductible and will help keep our organization healthy. Today we have four presenters: Rob Bennett from Bennett Management Company, John Rowell, Rowell Brokaw Architects, Craig Opperman, President and CEO of Looking Glass, Bryn Brubaker, White Bird Clinic, and Cahoots. They will launch today's brainstorming session with some ideas on what to do about Kesey Square. Things are happening on Kesey Square these days. Even in the chilly weather, folks are sipping tea, nibbling pizza, sampling beer, and checking out the new shops in places that used to be empty. I used to be able to see Kesey Square in a whole bunch of empty, crummy buildings. It doesn't look like that anymore. It looks really neat. It's a nice place to be now. But recent reports allege that some of the activities in the heart of downtown slip well past the boundaries of eccentric and into the yikes zone. Accepting that the normal range of behavior in the heart of any city, and particularly maybe in Eugene, will cause some people to cringe, we still notice that the oddly iconic statue of Kesey is often the center of behavior that most believe is unacceptable. To get things started in this brainstorming session, the speakers will present four different perspectives on the issue to provide food for thought. In the second part of the program, in addition to the customary questions and answers, we invite members and guests to summarize very briefly their observations and suggested remedies. And we'll start the conversation with Rob Bennett, and we'll move to John Brokaw. Both of these fellows have been involved in lots of development, including development downtown and development in public spaces, and they can watch Kesey Square from their office windows. We will then continue with Craig Opperman, who provide services to some of the people who might be found there, and likewise with Ben Brubaker. So, John, Rob?
Thank you very much for inviting me. I have 5 minutes, which is maybe more than I need. I don't know if any of you have ever worked with Rob Zacho, but I was laughing because he organizes a speaking event. And when he thinks you've spoken long enough, he kind of dances across in front of you going, you know, like that. So hopefully I'll be able to stay within my time. I'd like to say generally a few things about downtown, and then I'll say something about Kesey Square. The improvement that has occurred over the last 3 or 4 years is more than I've seen in a very long time, and probably since I started working on downtown issues, you know, 30 years ago. And so I'm very encouraged with the progress that have been made most recently. I say that in a relative sense, since it's been very frustrating how long it's really taken, at least in my view, from somebody who sort of comes here every day and works. One thing I think is really important to say about it, while we have gotten a fairly substantial amount of private investment, none of this would have been possible without the city. And maybe most of you know that, but I mean, in this kind of environment, in downtowns generally, it does not work if the city does not enter in and become a material part of the solution. And this is no different. And so, you know, some may argue for more or less city involvement in development, but in downtown, I'm just saying what you see out there today could not have happened without the city's strong involvement. And that, you know, that starts with John Reese, but Kitty Piercy, I mean, the council as a whole. So for somebody who is very much a downtown person, I'm very grateful for the combination of effort that has gotten us where we are today. Many of you know that the economics of downtown involve a very high successful downtown involve a very high level of street activity. And it's the kind of activity that in most cases involve commercial street level small businesses. And as you've noticed, we have more of those now. And we have a number of eating establishments, but we have other kinds of retail effort as well. And it's the sort of critical mass of those that, you know, allow for an interesting place, a viable downtown, something that's interesting and exciting and, you know, allows people to really, the community to really enjoy it. Permanent housing, which we're getting some more of, I think is also an important part. So if you believe in compact urban growth, the core, the center of the community has to have housing. The goal, and I've probably said this 1,000 times, but the goal is to try to create an environment where a broad cross-section of the community uses downtown on a regular basis. We don't have that yet. And so I find myself talking always in a relative sense, but we really don't have that yet. But it is what the goal is. I think that's what the goal is. From an economic point of view then, the location and the condition of Kesey Square does not fit that, because it is essentially dead space. Now, you know, we have some small food vendors there, but if you think about the activity on a continuous basis every day, a fairly high level of street level activity, it's basically dead space. And even if we didn't have a transient problem there, which we do, it would be dead space. I mean, and it is dead space because the public, general public, doesn't use it. It isn't attractive to the general public. And I'll let others that know more about the design sign talk about why. But so we have one corner of sort of what I consider the heart of downtown, the center of downtown, that is essentially dead space every day. Now, you can organize special events, and you can have the Eugene celebration, and those are all important and wonderful. But it's the everyday attraction that we're looking for, as in my view, as a community. You know, I'm not good enough to understand the transient situation, except that I know that when the Kesey Square sort of gets taken over by the transient population, it is a continuous perception of safety. So even in the building we have now, our newer building and others, you know, employees are asking for somebody to accompany them when they go from work to their car. So we get drug and alcohol problems, we get bad language, we get bad behavior. But mostly we get, while we want to welcome everybody downtown, we get a group of people concentrated in one area that make it very uncomfortable for other people that want to use and shop and use the facilities of downtown. I wish I knew the answer. I don't have that kind of expertise to know that. You know, I talk to people that tell me that they've tried to help, that it's a situation where we have people that just simply won't accept any help right now. And so my answer is to use that space differently.
Thanks, Rob. I'm pleased I won't be saying the same thing. I'm an architect. I practice architecture in my firm, Raoul Broca Architects. We're on the top floor of the building on the north end of Kesey Square. And I just want to talk a little bit about my observation sitting there, as I have done on that corner. That's where my desk is. And I look out over Kesey Square and have done so for, it's getting close to almost 10 years now when we bought the building, me and Greg and Kaz, and redeveloped it because we thought downtown was important. It's where we wanted to be. We wanted to contribute. And it's, as Rob was saying, it's been frustrating but really exciting, especially in the last couple of years. We waited a lot of years looking out thinking, wow, this was a mistake. And I think things are really looking up. But I want to talk about the physical place because, you know, that's what we do. We look at things, of course, in a holistic sense, and I'm going to let others talk about that. I'm not good enough to talk about some of the other issues, but I can talk about the physical place, urban design, and building design, and how your physical environment tells you something, and it may do positive things, it may actually drain energy from a place, and it's important to understand that. You can't solve everything with behavioral tools. Sometimes it's the environment. So I came to Eugene, 25 years ago or so. I was going to the University of Oregon. I got dropped off at the train station in the middle of the night, and wasn't going to pay for a hotel, so I just sat there. And then as the dawn came, I walked down Willamette Street, and, you know, the trees were blooming and the birds were singing, and I thought, this is a cool town. This is a nice place. And I walked through past the tank trap, if you were around to see that. Quite an impressive thing. And then the wood structure that lined the two walls that are the blank walls of Kesey Square. And that place felt like a room. I knew where I was, and I understood it. Now, the businesses were all closed because it was early morning. I didn't realize that was actually the twilight of the downtown mall, and they were maybe closing permanently. You come back, and they were dead. They were dying. They couldn't survive in that physical environment. And so we reintroduced the streets. That was a lot of work to get that to happen. It certainly was critical to get that to happen for us to think about. I mean, we're small time. Buying a building in downtown, if there was no street, we wouldn't have done that. So we invested. I've been observing and thinking, you know, how could this space be better? How could it contribute? Because it doesn't seem to be, corner doesn't seem to be working on all cylinders yet. It's way better, but not good enough. It is a weak corner, as Rob says. When I look out, a lot of times it's empty. We try to fill it, but a lot of times it's empty. And empty space in a commercial setting where you're trying to run a store or you just want a fun place to walk down the street, that sense of emptiness is really negative. It's like sapping the energy out of the corner. And from one day, we've been working with economic consultants and retail consultants, and I said, hey, went to my friend Chris, we should walk the street. Tell us what we need to do and what doesn't work. And he started explaining how retail works and how restaurants work. And he said, well, you got to have your corners have got to be strong. You can't have any weak corners. It just takes away from business life. You can't do that. You don't have enough energy right there. So we looked at the corner and thought, okay, there's a project right there. We need to get more energy going there. But back to the physical side of this, one problem is the space seems to face away from the sun. Now, today there's no sun, but the place that's the most public in a way, the place where you could gather, is in the southeast corner, and it's got tall walls. So just that, you would never really design a space to do that. We've got to remember that this whole space, the square, when it was done for the downtown mall, was a different idea about it. And if you imagine drawing the plan of that and thinking about that urban room, it may have worked then, but when we put the streets back in and we ended up leaving a blank corner, it doesn't feel right. That's partly because it doesn't have that place doesn't have access to sun. It also is an odd proportion. I think I've watched people come to town, come to the corner, come to the Kesey sculpture, and then sort of stand there and scratch their heads and wonder, well, what is this? Where am I? It's confusing. It just is confusing as a space. It's getting better because we have more going on. But the space that looks the most public is almost like an afterthought, an alcove. And that seems problematic. The blank walls, I think everyone agrees that those are a problem. They are a result, a leftover of tearing down the wooden structure that many of you might remember, that was a problem. It got torn down. Nothing ever happened with those blank walls. They're essentially party walls to the building that once stood there. And we, on our City Hall work the other day, I was looking at a photo of that corner, and I noticed that what was, and I may be wrong about this, but it looks like there was a masonry building there, two stories, exactly on that footprint. It was a drugstore. Kind of ironic, but actually, I miss a drugstore downtown. I could use one, but that's what it was, and it kind of looks like that now. Hey, this looks like we knocked down a building and then put red brick and took it, and you know, we did our best, but it's really an issue to think about the physical cues that space gives us, and what do we need to do to either make that space strong or say, you know what, and maybe it can't be fixed. Maybe we need to turn our intentions for public space, which I really believe is important. City squares are important. Streets are important. If it's not working, if it doesn't have the bones of a space that can work, then don't waste more energy trying to fix something that is never going to work. And I'm worried that if we spend a lot more money trying to fix that, it's got some fundamentals that are just, I'm afraid, are not right and we can't fix. So it's got there's a lot of positive about that corner. It should be our 100% intersection. It's right now it's 75% because one corner is missing. It's weak, it's a void. And I think we need to figure out how do we get it back to 100%? Because businesses, and we've seen this even in trying to lease our ground floor, not gonna work, not until the retail environment is stronger. So you have to subsidize it. We take risks, we just hope for the future, but for a lot of folks, they can't take that risk. So what would I do? I think if you're going to try to fix that space, it's extreme makeover. It's not some working around the edges or like changing the color of something. You got to change the fundamental order of that space, and that might mean making something bigger or changing the walls that bound it. I think we should consider finding public space in the city, a real city square in another location that actually sees the sun instead of is in the shadows, and keep this as a public corner. I mean, we've got to find a way to keep the energy, but you know, we should even consider a building on that corner. Now, you talked about if you're a hammer, everything's a nail, and I'm an architect, so everything's a building, but that's, I think that public space between buildings that's formed by buildings is important as the buildings themselves. It's a conversation between public and private. It's a conversation across to someone else. If there's no one there, if the building is blank, there's no conversation, and that's the problem. So if we put something on that corner that was publicly relevant, that everyone could use, that was really interesting, I think that would be a positive move. And I know that folks might think that's shocking, that's taking away public space. It wasn't public space until the downtown mall. We made it. Now we've changed it. It doesn't work. We need to be really creative and open in our thinking about where and how to make that space happen. Thanks.
Trying to adjust this without too much damage. So I'm really happy to be here, actually. But as I listen, I realize too, although I was worried I completely flunked or missed the assignment, but John gave me an opening back in because since I work in social services, I see social issues and addressing those kind of from every angle too. So that's more of where I'm coming from on all this. I appreciate the comments that have already been made, and I'm really familiar with White Bird and their work and appreciate that. I'm looking forward to hearing from Ben in a minute. From my perspective, Looking Glass, as you probably know, Looking Glass Youth and Family, we serve children, youth, adults, and families with a comprehensive system of behavioral health care. So we do a lot of mental health counseling, alcohol and drug treatment, various educational services, including 6 school programs. And one significant focus area of our programming, obviously, is for runaway and homeless youth. And runaway and homeless youth happen to be seen not infrequently in Kesey Square and downtown. So here we are. Here we go. Before I go too much further, I do want to let you know I'm going to stick to the script, because when I go off of it, this is about 20 minutes, and that would get me in trouble with Mary. So I'm going to try and follow along, and I look forward to further discussion and questions. I do want to really recognize a couple people, though. I'm lucky enough to have some of the folks that educate me on this issue and other issues here today. One is Kirsten Lee, who's our Runaway and Homeless Programs Director. And another is Chris Mirabal, who's program manager for Looking Glass New Roads Homeless Youth Program. They're right here. Please appreciate them. And they'll keep me honest, too. I was glad that Mary said we can't put people down, because I'd be in trouble with that crowd. I want to thank all the Looking Glass staff, but call out one other person who's been really helpful on this issue specifically, who is a supervisor at New Roads. That's James Ewell. He does incredible work. He's brilliant, and he saves the lives of kids all the time. And I don't know if he'll hear or see this, but we need to let him know how we appreciate him, too. Please thank James Ewell and our other staff. And then the final shout out, I'm sure I'm missing people, so apologies in advance, but I really have to echo some comments. The city here and the county and law enforcement, folks we work with, are incredibly helpful to Looking Glass in their mission. And I've noticed that Chief Pete Kearns is here and City Manager John Reese, and I've talked with them extensively. They've helped us extensively on these issues. I'd really like to appreciate their work and the fact they're here today. So I want to... You know, I'm realizing, although I was out of town, I did catch up. I'm an avid reader of the Register Guard subscriber, and I know that the articles in the paper have some relationship or connection to today. I want to take a little bit different angle on that, in that one of my favorite sections of the Register Guard is Today in History, which I read all the time, along with the comics. But I'm going to read a couple quick Today in Histories to you. I want to go back to Wednesdays. Which was Wednesday, January 15th, 15th day of 2014. There are 350 days left in the year. Today's highlight: on January 15th, 1929, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was born in Atlanta. And then, of course, there's a laundry list of other things and birthdays, but I just wanted to take note of the fact that it's great we're having this gathering to talk about this in the midst of at least a week of celebrations of Martin Luther King Jr., because challenges like this that come up, we can always learn from what that man did when he faced these. So for today in history, Friday, January 17th, the 17th day of 2014, there are 348 days left in the year. And my edit into today's list of events would be that in Eugene, Oregon, there are between 50 and 150 young people under the age of 18 that are homeless today. So about those underage runaway and homeless youth, that's what I want to talk about. We can always find exceptions to the rule and know somebody who doesn't quite fit what I'm about to tell you, but most of these young people have really clear reasons for being on the streets. They're usually leaving dangerous home or community environments that have caused them physical or emotional trauma. These include physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect and emotional abuse, domestic violence, alcohol and drug use. These youth are seeking safety, comfort, and acceptance. When they are verbally or physically abusive, or acting in a criminal manner, these behaviors are often induced by past traumatic experiences. Now, this doesn't mean that those are acceptable behaviors, and it doesn't mean that those behaviors should not have consequences, but it does mean that those behaviors are understandable. And with that understanding, our street outreach teams are able to engage these youth and often move them into a more productive and positive path. I want to mention some of the outreach team's recent observations over the past several months as they go through downtown and Kesey Square. They're observing increased open use of drugs with no attempt to stop or conceal that usage. And they're seeing more younger women in the accompaniment of older men. And they're getting many more requests for food and water from these youth. Now, we know that these youth are highly vulnerable to developing alcohol and drug problems, to be physically and sexually abused, and to becoming victims of human sex trafficking. They're highly likely to develop chronic health problems, chronic mental health problems, and criminal behaviors, or other problems that are quite costly to themselves and our community. But we know something else. If we intervene quickly and effectively, we can turn a negative trend into a positive one. When our runaway and homeless youth programs are able to intervene within 72 hours, most of these youth are successfully returned to their family or community and do not end up homeless. We also know that if they are homeless more than 14 days, they have an 80% increased chance of becoming chronically homeless. So early effective intervention is key to preventing runaway and homeless youth from becoming homeless adults. So my proposed solution, both practical and visionary, as requested by Mary, is that our city and its elected leaders, business and government leaders, law enforcement, social service, education, community leaders, all of our citizenry come together to eliminate underage homelessness in Eugene, that we really double down or triple down on focusing on those young people. Now, this solution takes an immense problem, homelessness, and focuses on a workable population, those 50 to 150 underage youth that are coming into homelessness in our city each year. This would reduce the overall homeless population by a small percentage in the short term, though small is significant. But in future years, it would have significant impact as these youth would be far less likely to end up as homeless adults. It would be a significant prevention of future homelessness. So I'm not proposing to take resources away from any other service or providers because they're needed right now more than ever. In fact, I would advocate to increase resources to law enforcement and social service providers. We need each other. But I'm suggesting we find ways to develop more resources to focus on homeless underage youth. So that when I read the Guard a year from now, on January 17th, 2015, and I go to Today in History, I'm going to read, "And in Eugene, Oregon, a great notion from last year was celebrated today as a community achieved their goal of having no underage youth experience homelessness."
So my name is Ben Brubaker. I am from the Whitebird Clinic. I'm an administrator there, and I'm also a crisis worker on the CAHOOTS team. Chuck Girard couldn't be here today, and so he sent me to be his representative and the representative to Whitebird, and I'm very honored to be able to be on this panel of folks talking about these issues. As a crisis worker on the CAHOOTS van, I am acutely aware of the issues downtown and across Eugene. I would say that a large number of the folks that we see that are homeless, definitely kind of reflecting, Looking Glass's perspective on it, are adults with similar kinds of issues. And many of those issues, even if they currently have substance abuse as maybe one of the primary things going on, are really what we call dual diagnosis. Significant amounts of trauma or chronic mental illness that are leading people to be on the streets. Down in Kesey Square, there definitely are gatherings of people that are down there. And you'll notice I'm not using the word transient. I think that's a misnomer. I know very clearly from meeting a lot of the people that I work with that there are people that are passing through Eugene, and there's a lot of people that grew up here, that live here, and really live in the neighborhoods in which they sleep and try to survive. And so I think that as we look at this issue, we have to recognize that these aren't people passing through. A lot of these folks are our community, for better or worse. Down in Kesey Square in particular, I think that it's interesting that we're looking at how to reorganize that space or to do something with it to try to make it better. I think that no matter how we change that space there, the issue is still going to remain. It may be moved. It may be relocated to a different neighborhood. But I don't believe that it's going to go away. And I think that there's been years of enforcement going on of trying to move folks around, move them out of those areas to varying degrees of success. I wonder if, as we look at this problem, we couldn't start also looking at how can we better interact with these folks. because excluding them, trying to identify, label, target them, I don't know if that's the best way to really approach people that we're trying to correct their behaviors. What are the behaviors that we're experiencing downtown? And we've heard some of them, harsh language. I know aggressive panhandling is often a complaint that we'll hear sometimes. Open drug use, things like that. Like, if these are the behaviors that we're looking at wanting to correct, it seems to me that stepping in with folks that are trained at being interventionists to be able to step in and talk to those people, link them up with services. And again, as homelessness has increased in this area recently, there's been, unfortunately, a decrease in funding, which it means that even if interventionists, cahoots, whatever those people are that are stepping in to help, even as we step in to try to assist, we are finding fewer and fewer resources for us to send people to. What we tend to call the door to nowhere. We can relocate them. We can try to help them, remind them of the behaviors that the community is expecting of them. But there isn't always like a single solution of like what to do with them. And through all of that, I think that we could talk for hours on how do you solve things like substance abuse, how do you deal with ongoing chronic mental illness. And I don't know if that's really like the point of what we were trying to get at today. I think that in addition to that kind of trained intervention downtown, that one of the key things that I see that would be useful in the city right now is more housing first. And across the nation right now, and really around the world, we're seeing more and more of the housing first model. Unfortunately, a lot of the emergency shelter options, things like that in Eugene, mean that you can only use that emergency shelter option if you are clean and sober in that moment. That immediately eliminates 40 to 60% of the population that we work with. So without some kind of wet housing to be able to let people get some shelter so that that's one less worry, one less daily survival worry they have, I don't believe that we're going to be able to move forward with really addressing any of the issues downtown and with the behaviors that we're seeing. And right now that's a really limited option for folks, and there isn't really any kind of resource out there. Just real quickly, you know, when we start looking at is this a cost-effective approach, because when it comes down to it, we're looking at issues around money. The Journal of American Medicine reported that 95 chronically homeless individuals with alcohol use disorder, I believe this one was out of Seattle, that just taking those people and housing them first, even if they weren't clean and sober yet, that they saw a savings of an estimated $4 million in the first year alone based on the cost of police, the costs to the hospital, the cost to the community overall. Denver's Housing First program found an average cost savings of $31,500 per participant that they got into housing first. Los Angeles found that individuals experiencing chronic homelessness reduced public costs by 79%. Most importantly, studies have consistently shown that Housing First dramatically improves the quality of life of participants. Housing First programs in 2005 in Utah, since then they've seen a 74% reduction in the homelessness rate there, and they continue to see declines every year. And I think recently there were actually some studies specifically with the veteran populations in Utah, and they've had enormous amounts of success with this kind of Housing First option. And I think it's those kinds of programs, as well as taking and putting trained people downtown that could intervene in the correct kind of way with the folks that we see, that we'll really be able to start curtailing the kinds of behaviors. You know, at Whitebird, we see a lot of these same clients that are also downtown, and we have to deal with them frequently in the front room and out front of our property with behaviors that we don't find acceptable inside of our house or out front of our building. The most successful intervention with them is to not come out and, as an authoritarian figure, demand that they change their behavior immediately or else, and instead is to go out and talk with them and speak with them, figure out what's going on with them a little bit, and then see if we can help refer them over to some other service or agency that might be able to help them. Even when there's a door to nowhere where we can't really send them anywhere directly, that kind of conversation, in my experience, tends to start to change and shift the behaviors that we're seeing. And I think that that's the kind of approach that Ken Kesey would probably appreciate. And considering that we're talking, you know, about his square, his statue, and I went around looking a little bit just to see if Ken had ever written on this kind of stuff, and I just want to end what I'm saying here with a quote from Ken Kesey. When I see the bad-looking bikers with black leather studs on their wrists hanging out at the Oregon Country Fair, I take it as a sign of health. No, I don't want them hanging around, but trying to eliminate them all, arrest them all, legislate them all, that's evil. I've asked feminists, if you could, would you eliminate all male chauvinist pigs? If you could come up with some kind of spray to spray in the air and do away with them, would you? Would you do away with all the scorpions and rattlesnakes, mosquitoes? Mosquitoes are a part of the ecosystem, so are male chauvinist pigs. You gotta fight them, but you don't have to try to exterminate them. A purifying group or system that would eliminate them all, that would be an evil force. Anytime you have a force that comes along and says, we will eradicate these people, you have evil. Looking back in history, what has seemed the worst turns out to not be the worst. And I thought that that was really appropriate for the topic today and as far as what Ken Kesey might have to say about some of these things. And overall, I think that Eugene has done a better effort than a lot of other cities that I've been in. There are services here that don't exist in a lot of other cities. There are groups of people working to try to help the folks here that find themselves down and out and on the streets. And I wouldn't criticize our efforts to this point necessarily, but I think there's always room for improvement. I'm just not sure that moving the problem around is really the solution.
Thank you, Ben, Craig, John, and Rob. And now we will break for some table talk and for you to identify your own questions and comments.
You're listening to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, at 88.1, KLBR Bend, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and on the web, klcc.org.
Hi, my name is Allie Valkyrie. I'm a guest here. Thank you for this 3 minutes. I want to thank all the panelists for what you had to say, but I especially want to really zone in on what Craig and Benja were saying regarding this population. I am extremely, extremely well acquainted with the populations we are talking about. And, you know, one thing I want to put out there is Terry McDonald of St. Vincent de Paul does maintain that 80% of this population is local, and they are not transient. They really are ours. And, you know, in my mind, I kind of split the population, the trouble population, into three groups of people. There's, you know, the co-diagnosis, as Benja mentioned, those with mental illness and or addiction issues. And then there's a rather large contingent of homeless youth. And for that first group, those with mental illness and addictions, I really think that an on-the-ground crisis response team, CAHOOT style, people who walk around as the downtown guides do, are absolutely necessary. And frankly, the only thing that's really going to change the dynamic downtown. The law enforcement move on or else approach absolutely does not work. I've watched it time and time again. It does not work. We are simply wasting our money. But the approach that Ben just spoke of, that's what works. And, you know, these are folks who need help. These are folks who need interventions. They don't need condemnation. They don't need to go through a revolving door jail system. As for that third group, the homeless youth, you know, and Looking Glass does amazing, amazing, amazing programs, but what I see really missing is something directly downtown for homeless youth to be involved in. This is not a new problem. I'd like to give you a little quote from Perspective. Jack Glass, director of the Lane County Juvenile Department, told the group that he's sure more opportunities for juvenile activities can be found in the community if businessmen and housewives would come together to provide an organized program for juvenile delinquents. One of the primary programs is finding work and personal counseling for them. He believes the community can solve some of the juvenile delinquency problems if it finds more for the youth to do downtown and can give personal counseling. This is from the Register Guard in 1958. Let's get some youth programs directly downtown. Let's get these kids out of the square. Public space is important. Keep our public space. Work on the population. Thanks.
Hi. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Larry Crompton, and I am the sergeant of the downtown team. I understand that our problem is much bigger than Kesey Square, and I am here to talk about just Kesey Square. I'm not here to talk about the homeless issues. I'm not here to talk about drug addiction and numbers. Kesey Square is what I was asked to comment on. I've been downtown for going on 2 years now, and I think we've come a long ways. We have a long ways to go still, but it is much better now than it was 2 years ago. Kesey Square, there's some things that can be changed to make it better. It's not a matter of running homeless out of downtown. That's not what we're trying to do. It's behavioral based. The community has a right to be downtown and not live in fear of aggressive people, people that are strung out on drugs. And be honest with you, you all know our challenges with getting prosecution, and that doesn't seem to be an option right now. I've heard some ideas of putting a building in there. I have absolutely no opinion on that. It is what it is right now, and how can we make it better? One of the suggestions I would make is if we want to stop the aggressive behavior that mostly occurs in the late hours, in the evenings, primarily in the summertime when the numbers are up, restrict the use in the evenings. There's people that would argue why that's bad. However, I believe the positive outcome of restricting the use at such as a city park is going to resolve a lot of those problems. Who is in that space in the evenings? Who do we want to cater to downtown? And I'm not referring to the population who actually live here, who happen to be out of their houses because of some adverse situation. I'm talking about the travelers, the people that we deal with most often from a law enforcement perspective, people who are aggressive, people who are using drugs, drinking, fighting, stabbing, others, assaults. It happens down there. And it happens primarily in the late evenings. So 11 p.m., unless it's a legitimate activity, we've got food carts in their businesses. We need to be able to protect those businesses. They're small businesses, and these people, they depend on this income. Right now, it's public space. When the businesses are closed, people can do what they want, go where they want in that square, and a lot of them end up behind, out of sight, doing the things that they do. They vandalize the carts. It's common that we find vomit and feces and urine, and it's vile conditions, and it doesn't have to be. So I just want to let everybody know that there are some things that we can do downtown in that plaza to make the conditions better than they are. Thank you.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. We seem to be talking about two different things here. One is how to use that space downtown and how to take care of problems that have come about from the people who are gathering in that space. You say, Rob, that this is the center of town. That may be a little bit questionable, but it probably is at least its traditional center of town. I took a trip up to Vancouver, British Columbia one time, and I got out of the train and I went outside, big park out there, and across the park was this magnificent water feature. I've never seen a waterfall like that any place as beautiful as this, but boy, that was the center of town. I mean, they're not even that nice up in Portland or over in Springfield, but why couldn't we use that space to have a center of town kind of thing? A beautiful waterfall. Maybe some of the people might be taking a bath in there or peeing in it or something, but that's a police problem. But that seems to me, you know, to do something for downtown to make it really come alive, to have something like that would be really valuable, I think. The problems that that people come in there that are using it right now, what's being said is very, you know, homes first and stuff like that, all the things that we've been talking about. Thank you.
I'm Rob Bennett. I've asked to say that for the radio, I guess. First, I didn't mean to insult anybody by calling the people there. I mean, I'm old, so I'm using an old term maybe, and I'm not paying attention. I don't mean to insult. My understanding is that, in my mind, a transient is a person who doesn't have a home and is sort of living in one place or another, and it could be very much in the local community. So I hope you'll forgive me that. We could have a waterfall. That would certainly be an improvement over what we have now. But it doesn't create the level of activity that we really need at street level. I mean, we need a concentrated, intense level of shops, and just like you see in any exciting shopping area where there are specialty retail. I mean, specialty retail is where we have a chance to really make a difference. So while there may be more than one solution, this is a solution. The solution of having a building there with some everyday use that is that attracts people and creates traffic and activity at street level is what gives us the best chance to maintain our momentum downtown.
Hi, my name is John Monroe, and I am a guest. Try as I might, I could not find an animal that I thought Kesey Square was like. So I'm going to instead relate my experience from the city town I lived in before here, which is Missoula, Montana, which is half the population and by far, without any insults implied, a much more functional downtown for various reasons. And one of the reasons I would argue is because of a wonderful facility called the Pavarello Center, of which some of my friends were involved. And it is an organization, imagine some of the people here probably know about it, but it's a day center for the homeless and very poor individuals in Missoula. And when the people that eventually got the Pavarello Center going first started presenting the idea, there was a large outcry in Missoula about the massive amount of people that would descend upon the city the moment there were services. And now, several years after the Pavarello Center has been going, they found there's no significant statistical change in the amount of population there. The population overall has grown because Missoula is a growing town, and the per capita amount of homeless has stayed the same, even though, of course, there are more people now that are poor because the city itself is growing. So one thing that we learned from Missoula and that definitely changed the quality of downtown, the experience, was the fact that because there was a place for people to go, there tended to be a very amiable relation between the bulk of the homeless people and the student population, which inhabited most of the bars there, and then the townies. There was a place for people to go. The homeless didn't feel trapped in any particular location. And as was pointed out from the design aspect, Kesey Square is not an ideal space. And so if you're not only hanging out there, but forced to hang out there, because that's really the only public space, it's especially bad for that person. And if we had public spaces that were designed for people who will be there a lot because they don't have homes, and if we take into the fact that homelessness will be an issue for a while, and we're going to be working on it for a while, then that'd be a really positive solution. I was very excited to hear that, you know, we could consider other public spaces. But for the time being, and noting, as Mr. Bennett did, the very active amount of influence that the city has had downtown, I would just bring to people's attention that the building directly behind Lane County, Lane Community College, where the audio company is currently housed, is a city-owned property. It would make a wonderful place to begin at least a prototype of a downtown center in order to try to get people in a location away from some of the more public spaces. I think Kesey is a difficult animal, whatever kind of animal it might be, because of its non-intentional past. It wasn't designed to be a public space, and therefore is not necessarily something that we should be all hinging our hopes on. But it's clear that we're going to need space, and as we now know, the city and the police are planning to close Whoville very soon, and many of those people will be back downtown, and some of those are the most difficult people, and will again cause quite a bit of money to the city and the taxpayer, and again create quite a problem for the downtown business owners. So until we find another substitute place, I'm going to continue to believe Kesey Square is a place where people should be allowed to congregate. Thank you.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. For goodness sakes, we're here in Eugene. Our biggest celebrity was Ken Kesey, and his big celebrity was mental illness, drugs, and alcohol. And We haven't done shit about that. We've done nothing about that to help people with those problems. He described how bad it was to be in a mental hospital in his most famous book that's been made into a movie. Right now in town is his old bus called Further, with all the psychedelic painting on it. And he went all over Washington, California, everywhere in the country, advertising Eugene as the drug center of the West Coast. We need to do something. We need to have a place where people can come who are into that culture and be safe. What we've done mostly is abandon people. We have given up on that problem. We've given up on children and adults. We underfund what we've got. There should be a big community center, but people are scared to death to run one, you know, because of the behavior problems that might come from the use of LSD. And we all know a lady who's been homeless, wandering the streets, having psychedelic flashbacks, always of the most terrible things that ever happened in her life, since the day she ran with Ken Kesey.
Hi, my name is Thomas Petizar. I'm a guest. I am a business owner downtown. I own the Barn Light coffee shop and bar immediately across the street from Kesey Square, just west of Kesey Square. And I'd like to start out with what I do like about Kesey Square. Kesey Square is a landmark. So for me, if someone's not familiar with the Barn Light, they want to know where it is, I can say, we're across the street from Kesey Square, and they know where that is. That's valuable. Instant recognition. That's great. On the flip side of that, in the same conversation, oftentimes when I say that, there is an immediate negative impression of my business, given its association and proximity to Kesey Square. Even before they set foot through our door, there's already that negative impression of our business. So I do believe that there needs to be change, that Kesey Square needs to change, along with the positive change that has already taken place downtown, and of which we've been a part. I can see the benefits of both sides of the coin, whether it be improving it as a public space, downtown should have a public space, or developing it and putting some kind of more permanent structure there. Whatever that change may be, I'm not here to decide, but I would suggest that you please try to maintain that landmarkedness. I think that is very important. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
My name's Ben from Whitebird, and I just wanted to address that real quick. We actually have a small little yurt out back of Whitebird, a little kiosk, and my understanding is that kiosk might be part of the wooden structure that you were talking about that was down there. And that structure, from what I understood, used to be a information and referral place that people could walk up to. It was a little wooden structure that people could walk up. And so as I'm hearing these different ideas, and just to kind of, you know, piggyback on that, can we keep it a public space? Can we bring in more carts? But it's going to have to be staffed. And I wonder about going back to having a kiosk down there that has an information and referral for human services that could also be staffed to help with some of this intervention that needs to go on. And that just kind of occurred to me based on his comments. So,
My name is Sue Gallego. I came here as a guest. And I have over time, I've lived here off and on for the last 15 years, specifically back and forth between Denver. And then I go way back. I know that Eugene is an old hippie town. I have a vision of Eugene, a center for Eugene, not a square, but a peace sign. And in this, I see that, you know, people are encouraged to participate. I don't think that you can eliminate the kind of problems that Eugene has, or that, you know, problems are problems. They're everywhere. You're not going to eradicate them. I think that you have to incorporate all those issues and make them workable. To take that space downtown and make it, designate the space, designate the time. There's time when people want to eat lunch down there. There's times when... I think that homeless people really need a place where they can congregate. I think that if you could separate the alcohol from the camp, and that camp would be alcohol-free, that if there was actually a place where people could go, like a beer garden or whatever, you know, close it down at 9 o'clock, people have to disperse. Not, you know, like policing it, but more like cooperating with its use. One of the things that I thought of in terms of the center, when I thought of that idea, was a club for youth, and that club to be like a biographical, you know, call it the bio. It's I used to do hair, and I noticed that when I did hair, I would see kids, and they would like want people to notice them. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be vocal, and I see that with all the, you know, video and media today. People want to be seen and noticed, and I know that there's a lot of artists in those kids. There's all kinds of creativity, and I think that that could be channeled. But if those kids could go to that bio club, if they could develop it themselves, deal with their issues, be challenged to find revenue, be challenged to make a contribution to other businesses, there's ways that you could tie it in. I have detailed ideas, but I don't have time to express them. I'm, you know, being given the time. But I'd like to thank everyone here for your topics and your views, because I found it to be very significant. Thank you.
If I could just respond one. If the subject were how to actually handle the homeless issue, I mean, you know, Craig be, I mean, I wouldn't be here. I mean, in the sense that I wouldn't be able to contribute from an educational or an experience point of view. What the reason I'm here is to say, to try to make the strongest case possible to you that Kesey Square, as it's now being used, isn't going to work if you want to have a successful downtown. Because a successful downtown, for whatever the reason you use it for, it does not have a street-level retail experience for people. We are not going to reach the goal of getting a broad cross-section of the community here on a regular basis. I'm just saying that to you. I do not have the answer to the social issues that are raised here, but I'm listening. I mean, I'm trying to listen as a citizen. But what I am here to say is that, you know, there are certain fundamentals that will work in downtown, and there are certain things that won't work. And if we're going to maintain the you know, if you agree with me that we've made this, you know, in a relative sense, really strong progress over the last 2 or 3 years, and you believe in downtown, and you support downtown, and you want it to continue, Kesey Square doesn't work.
Robin Fletcher, a city club member, and I have an idea, because the Kesey Square is an open space that isn't working. I think it should be built into something like an incubator, like the old Fifth Street Market used to be, inside small vendors, many small vendors, moving around all the time, new ones, making opportunities for people to make more new businesses.
Thank you, Ben Brubaker, Craig Opperman, John Rowell, and Rob Bennett, for helping us begin to find some clarity and vision for Kesey Square. let's see. We have, again, to remind you, our sponsors today are Evans Elder Brown, Helios Resource Network, PAC Info Internet Solutions. We meet again next Friday on January 24th at the Downtown Athletic Club to learn about a pilot program offered by City Club in collaboration with the Lane Workforce Partnership last fall, building bridges between business and education. This is something that emerged from the thriving communities and prosperous regions summits that City Club did as an experiment with Lane Workforce Partnership. We plan to continue it. It worked really well, we thought. But we're going to tell you all about it next week. And thanks for this brainstorming session. City Club stands on the alert to help pursue any of these plans. It seemed like they might be workable if we could assemble the resources together. Thank you very much for coming.